This is the Cactus League Report on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and mariners.com. Taking you inside Mariners spring training, live from the Salty Senorita in Peoria, Arizona. Here's your host, the voice of the Mariners, Rick Rizz.
And we're live before a cheering cast of thousands tonight here at the Salty Senoritas in Peoria, Arizona, spring training 2017. Wow, a lot of games in the books right now. Hi again, everybody, and welcome to sunny Peoria, Arizona. Rick Rizz along with Mike Blowers and Shannon Dreyer. Aaron Goldsmith will join us in a little while. Producer-engineer Kevin Crevin. We have a great show planned for you tonight. We're going to visit with Mariners first base coach Casey Candell to start things off. And we're also going to visit with Boog Powell. Daniel Vogelback is going to be here. Dylan Overton, Chris Heston, who started the game today, Mike Hampton. The Mariners are having a tremendous spring down here in Peoria. And this gentleman right here to my left, we'll get to him in a moment, is going to be telling a lot of guys to turn left all season long because the Mariners down here at spring training scoring a lot of runs. They have a lot of speed this year, and it's going to be a fun season. Mike Blowers, great for you to join us along with Shannon Dreyer. And I tell you what, over the last couple of weeks, it's been fun watching this ball club get ready. Your thoughts on what you've seen so far?
Well, we all heard so much about the speed over the course of the winter, and we saw it front and center today with Dyson and what he was able to do on the base pass, picking up three hits and a couple of stolen bases for him. But I think it's just across the board just how much more athletic they look. And obviously they're swinging the bats extremely well. Going into today's game, the highest batting average of any club.
Yeah.
So a lot of things are happening. It has been a little bit strange, though, with the World Baseball Classic going on because, you know, for me, I want to see Robbie swing the bat. I want to see Nelson do his thing. I want to see Segura.
On television.
Well,
but not here with the
ball club. Exactly. Yeah. So I think a lot of positives across the board. I think that the one thing that I really like, too, are the power arms that they didn't have last year when they broke camp. They had one guy, Tony Zick, that was 94, 95 or better. They're going to start the season with some guys out there that can take care of business. And I think that'll make a big difference for them, too.
And, Shannon, talking about Tony Zick, he had a chance to throw a bullpen session today, a little batting practice to Tuffy Gosiewicz. And it looks like he might be ready to get in the game after another bullpen and another BP session, hopefully, in the near future.
Well, they're going to be careful with him because he hasn't thrown in a game for a little while. But Tony himself said everything, you know, felt great. He would like another live BP session. And then, you know, usually the progression is maybe another bullpen and then into a game. We'll have to see what happens at that point. But it's been, you know, a nice progression for him throughout the spring. I think there's a good chance we'll see him in a game before the end of spring. He's got some new mechanics that are actually, it appeared he had a little bit more movement on the fastball today, which is good for him. But just to see him come out of that session right there and just the enthusiasm that he had about it was funny. He said afterwards, well, we're going to find out right now. I mean, either my arm comes off or it doesn't. He wasn't going to hold much back, he said.
No, he had a great session this afternoon. How about a nice round of applause for our very first guest? He's the Mariners' first base coach, second year with the organization. These coaches on the staff, Scott Service, Jerry DePoto, have all done a great job. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce Casey Candell is with us live here at the Salty Senorita. Casey, how you doing, buddy? Thanks for coming tonight.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me over.
It's great to have you here, buddy. You like to have a lot of fun, and this ball club is having a lot of fun. Before we talk about the team and the way you guys have played and getting ready, and guys are at the World Baseball Classic, and you're taking a look at a lot of youngsters. What are your thoughts about doing the same thing with that 9 o'clock morning meeting, getting to know one another and having a good time there, and then going out onto the practice fields and getting ready for the season and getting your work done? Tell us about what goes on at 9 o'clock in the morning for you guys to become a team.
Well, I can't tell you everything because there's some strange stuff that goes on in there. But, it's just building camaraderie and getting to know different players and new players that have come in. And it's just so important for the continuity of the team and to get us out there and on the same page and going in the right direction. So I think those meetings for us are so important just because everyone gets to know one another and they understand that, you know, it's their team and you know, they're gonna get as close as they want to get and you know, move on from there. But I think, you know, Scotty's done a great job of bringing that together and letting them be themselves and be who they are and then show that on the field. It makes for a much more relaxed atmosphere for players to work in, and they can get a lot of work done and do their job.
Casey, is that something that you'd been around before and done maybe as a player or somewhere else, or is this something that Scott has come up on his own to have these meetings that you started last year?
I did it personally, but, not as a team.
I didn't either.
I never had those type of things. It was like you come in, you get dressed, you go out on the field, you stretch,
right,
and you do your work. But looking back, I think when I played, how great that would have been to build that team unity and get to know the other players that you might. I mean, it's strange because you don't know guys when you come in, and you get to know how they are and their personalities and what they like, and you laugh together and you talk about serious things, and it's just, I had never been a part of that before, and I think it's great, and Scotty brought that in, and I think it's been tremendous.
How do you see that kind of manifest itself throughout the year?
I just know last year, after doing it through spring, our team was together. We didn't get to the goal that we wanted to get to, but throughout the season, that team was all, it was there, and it continued throughout the year, and we battled. We went through ups and downs, but nobody ever panicked, and we were all together, and those guys in there did a great job, sticking together and doing what they needed to do to finish up strong and have a chance to make the playoffs. So I think that you can't overlook that, what it does.
You've got a lot of guys out for the WBC right now, and I'm still trying to figure out why you sent Nelson Cruz and told him to steal second.
Yeah, I called him and said, don't ever do that.
Yeah. Good phone call.
Hold on to him right there. Yeah. But who's going to step up in the meetings with so many key guys gone?
Gerard Dyson has done a great job. He's great personality, energy. Leonis is always, always fun. We do miss those guys. I mean, Robbie, Nelson, Felix, all those guys that are gone. It's just, it makes it a little bit harder, but they'll come right back into it when they get done playing. But, it's just been it's a load of fun, and it gets you ready to get out there and do your work. I mean, I just believe that it puts them in a great they're in a great frame of mind when they hit the field to get their work done. So.
The other part about it, too, that I've noticed is, and this is what's really different from when you and I play, is it's the younger players are involved and they're a part of it right away.
Right.
And look, you're going to have to lean on these guys at some point,
right,
so you may as well get them. Where when you and I played, it was more sit in the corner, keep your mouth shut.
Right.
We'll get to you when we get to you.
Right, and Scotty gets them up in front of everybody and has them tell them about themselves. You ask them questions. You get to know the guy, it's great. I think it immediately builds a relationship between the players, so it's great.
Visiting with Mariners first base coach Casey Candell. Casey, let's talk about this ball club, because Jerry DePoto made a lot of moves over the last couple of off seasons to put together this ball club. He had an idea of what he wanted, and he really has now a lot of speed on this ball club. The addition of Gerard Dyson, 3 hits today, a bunt single, 3 stolen bases. The addition of Gene Segura, who had 33 stolen bases last year with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Leonis Martin, 24 stolen bases, and he was on the deal for a couple of weeks. This young man here can steal some bases. Book Powell is going to be on the show next. But tell us a little bit about the dynamics, about how this ball club is going to play this year, because you have the power in the middle. You scored a lot of runs last year. You hit a lot of home runs, but now you have the element of speed.
Yeah, I mean, it just gives you another option in a way to win a ball game. I mean, last year we did not have great team speed, but we put up numbers because we hit home runs and we have great hitters. We still have those hitters.
Yeah.
We've added speed with guys that can get on base. So, I mean, it just adds a new dynamic to what you can do to scratch out a win. I mean, and those are the important wins of the season. The ones where it's a tie ball game late in the game and you steal a base and a guy gets a base hit with 2 outs and you end up scoring the winning run. I mean, base running and having the ability to steal bases at any given time with the guys that we have just brings a whole new dynamic to what we can do late in games. I mean, it's not necessarily, early in games. I mean, they're going to steal their bases, but it gives you the opportunity late in a game to do something that you probably wouldn't do instead of sitting there, you wait for a 3-run homer or, hope you get a couple hits, 3 hits. I mean, we have the ability to now get a guy that's on base, steal the base, get a base hit, score a run.
Hey, Casey, tell us a little bit about, I think it was introduced last year, but you had kind of the video boards and you have the different kind of numbers and stats and whatnot that you can look at. It used to be you just had a stopwatch, but now you've got so many more tools you can use that can aid guys in learning to steal bases better and make turns better and run the bases better.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the video is just tremendous, and the scouting reports that you can look at, and you can look at things. And most pitchers have little tells that they have that give you an advantage to steal a base. So you always have, I mean, it takes a little bit of studying to see it and to know it. And once you get it, though, it gives you a great advantage. So those kind of things, you know, like you say, the stopwatch, yeah, it tells you what they get to the plate. But if you can see something before what a guy does when he's going to deliver to the plate and what he does when he's going to pick over, it gives you such a big advantage. So those things are huge.
We had a chance to see Leonis last year and what he was capable of doing in center field, but now you have Dyson in left and Haniger in right. Outside of just being athletic and fast, what kind of outfielders are they? How do they throw? I really haven't had a chance to see either one of them throw. And what are your expectations of them as far as the outfield? Because I know that's something that Jerry talked about, how important it was to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, I don't believe the entire year any ball will fall in the outfield.
That's pretty good coaching.
I would tell them to go out there and run really fast and catch it.
That's great
coaching.
Yeah.
So, just the pure speed that they have. Haniger runs very well. He's a great outfielder, has great routes, as does Gerard, and we know Leonis. But just the ability to cover more ground is going to allow us to get to more balls and get more outs. I mean, that in and of itself makes a difference in the game. I mean, you know, if there's balls that you don't get to by a foot or two, they're going to get to. And as far as their outfield ability, just you know, what I've seen in spring and working with them, they all have great instincts and they get good jumps on the ball. And Haniger has a great arm from right field, and Gerard has a pretty strong arm from left field, and you know, the ability to get the ball in when they have it. So, I mean, it's really, really a great group of guys.
Visiting with Mariners first base coach Casey Candell. Casey, we're going to keep you here for a couple more minutes here on the Cactus League Report. You guys like to have a lot of fun. Nobody has more fun, I think, than you. And last year, you guys kept it loose late in the season. You made that run toward a bid for a playoff spot with the 8-game winning streak. And you did it in between there to make things fun, the Mariners Olympics. And you had that gold lame bodysuit or whatever it was. You came in with the tiki torch, still, Olympic torch. I still have it on my phone. And yeah. It was just a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
What do you have planned this year?
I don't know. I go out in that suit sometimes. I like
you
it.
Sharp.
I do want everyone to know I was the only one that won 2 gold medals in the Mariner Olympics. So
congratulations,
I'm pretty excited about that.
And what were the events?
Yeah, the events.
Balloon catching.
Okay.
Water balloon catching, and golf from the fourth story of the of Safeco into left field. Yeah, the upper deck. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
And maybe they'll add those to the Summer Olympics in 4 years
But we'll have some more stuff going on. We may bring back the Olympics. Every 4 years, that might be too long to wait. So
Casey,
we'll see,
what was
we'll
your best memory from last year off the field?
Off the field, I mean, for me, it's just the how well – you know, the coaching staff got along and how well, you know, we had the you know, just the goals of what we wanted to accomplish and how we wanted to bring our coaching to the players and make them understand it was their team and that you know, they needed to take it and run with it, and we were there to help them along. And I just think, for me, going to the field every day was a pleasure, and being a part of that and being able to be there and you know, just help out any way I could was great for me. But it was, you know, I mean, that was awesome.
Well, you helped out a lot, buddy. And I tell you what, it's going to be a fun year. It's going to be an exciting season. I can't wait for opening day on April the 3rd and the rest of the way at spring training. Ladies and gentlemen, Casey Candell, Mariners first base coach, joining us to kick things off from the Salty Senorita. Casey, thank you so much. Coming up next, Mariners outfielder Boog Powell having a tremendous spring. We'll be back live here at the Salty Senorita right after this timeout. Next off on the way, swinging a high fly ball deep into the gap in right center field, going and going off the top of the wall.
Barron, Ronnie, third. He's going to score. Powell, Ronnie, second, heading for three. The ball kicks out into center field where it's picked up by the right fielder, Holt. His throw in. Powell will check in at third base with an RBI triple. And it's now the Dodgers 12 and the Mariners 6. And he is our very next guest here on the Cactus League Report, live from the Salty Seniorita before at Cheering Cast of Thousands. Mariners outfielder Boog Powell. Before we get to Boog, this reminder, Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing will forever be on display at Safeco Field. A statue commemorating his Hall of Fame career is going to be unveiled next month. And when fans join us Friday, April the 14th, they're going to receive a free commemorative statue, plus the kid is going to be on hand to throw out the first pitch. Swing by Mariners.com for tickets. That's going to be great. Ken Griffey Jr. statue at Safeco Field. Boog Powell, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Boog Powell with an RBI triple this afternoon, as you heard. He came into the ballgame this afternoon hitting just 524 and now has four runs batted in for the spring. Did you think that one was gone? Because I did.
Yeah, that's all I got.
I can't believe Manny didn't send you.
I mean, we're down quite a couple runs, so yeah. Held me there.
It's been an outstanding spring for you. The average, you know, is incredible. You're driving the ball like crazy. What kind of spring has it been for you, and how have you been able to put up those type of numbers in the first couple of weeks?
The biggest part was going to the Dominican this offseason. Played up there with Manny Acta and got some at-bats and got me ready for spring training and came out here, fixed my swing a little bit, and just trying to be a more offensive hitter instead of just trying to be a leadoff hitter and see as many pitches. I'm just trying to drive the ball now, and it's working.
That's a big change for you because you very much identified leadoff before.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always tried to get to two strikes or trying to walk, and now I'm actually trying to start driving the ball, like 1-0, 2-0 counts, the offensive counts, trying to be more aggressive, and it's been working out here.
Dominican's a perfect place to work on that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was, I can't, it was just an overall amazing experience.
Why did you decide to make the change?
For what, swing?
From being just a leadoff hitter to just now you want to get after it and drive the ball a little bit more. What made you want to change?
Well, we had the hitting summit in January, and we were just talking in the classroom. Right. About just hitting and stuff, and I kind of thought about it, and then I talked to Casey about it. I talked to a couple other coaches, and I have the ability to drive the ball. I don't really do it as often as I should because I try to walk. I try to see as many pitches for the guys after me, and now I'm actually swinging the 2-0 I always used to take, and now I'm actually starting trying to drive the ball and swing a little harder, and it's been working out.
Yeah, great spring so far.
Thank you.
What's really interesting about that, Boogan, I didn't know that you had changed, you know, your approach in that in that manner, is Rick brought up your batting average, but in the wall in the Major League Clubhouse, and this just jumped out at me a couple of days ago, you've got the PTPA chart up, and you're leading that, too. And I don't know that everybody knows what that is, but can you tell people what that is and how do you balance
it?
Team. Productive team.
Productive team, play appearance. Yeah.
Right. So you're still getting the little things done, too, while driving the baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just moving runners over, seeing an eight-pitch at-bat, RBI, anything just productive for the team on offense, that counts towards a PTPA. And, yeah, I've gotten pretty lucky because, I mean, you could go up and no one could be on base, and it kind of sucks. So I've been put in good situations to where I can get the job done.
So you don't get points if nobody's on base unless you get the hit
You get a hit.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So it's harder to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, tell us a little bit about the competition. A lot of good young players in this camp. You know, Haniger and you and Heredia and Gamble. Of course, there's Martin out there in center field. There's so much talent on this ball club now in the outfield, obviously yourself included.
Yeah, they're all great guys. I mean, before spring training started, me, Gamble, Heredia, Freeman, we all went fishing out here. So that was a good experience. But no, they're all good. We've all been swinging it. So I mean, yeah, it's a competition, but we're all friends.
Yeah. Catch a lot of fish.
Yeah.
Down here.
Yeah, I actually did. O'Malley won. He I think he caught seven.
Have you fished for the fishing coach yet, Mel Stottlemyre Jr.?
He's
nope.
Good.
No, okay. No, I have not.
He
was not here
River
yet.
River in Idaho, man. He gets a big old salmon, man.
With the changes that you were talking about offensively, have you had an opportunity to work with Edgar much or Scott Brosius And what have they been able to help you with?
Yeah, I actually haven't been working with them much about it. I had my bat angle set a little far back, and now I'm just trying to keep my elbow up and get a little tilt with the bat to get a little whip. And that was the biggest change, and it's really going well.
Well, and that's the key to a good hitting coach is when a guy's hitting 500, leave him alone.
Yeah. He's a good coach. How you doing? Yeah. Just fine. Yeah. Like the commercial with Lee Ilya.
Exactly.
With Ken Griffey Jr., whoever was in the cage. Visiting with Mariners outfielder Boog Powell. Boog, tell us a little bit of, you know, coming from the Tampa Bay organization to the Mariners, and you got to impress a new manager and a coaching staff. What's that transition like in order for you to move forward and try to stick around in the big leagues as long as you can?
It's the same thing. I mean, every organization, I just try to go out there and play my best. I can't control. The only thing I can control is how the way I play and getting the jobs done and not making the least amount of mistakes as possible. And that's all I try to do. I try not to think about trying to make the team, trying to do this and that. I just try to control what I can.
Go out there and play.
Yeah.
Did you do the hitting summits both years?
Yeah.
Were they the same both years, or were there tweaks in the second year?
No, they were pretty much the same. PTPAs were a huge part of that, and it was really helpful.
What was the impact you saw last year during the season with that as a team?
The PTPAs, I mean, just trying to get, like, every at-bat I could, just trying to do the job. I mean, runner on third, less than two outs, hit a fly ball, just get them in. Any way you can, no matter what, just get them in. And so that's the mentality I have, and I try not to think about everything else, just that one thing.
It's one thing to talk about it. Do you guys practice that in batting practice or work on those things?
Yeah, we have certain – so, like, first round it'll be, like, two hit and runs, two get them overs, two get them in. So, yeah, we do that.
Right.
I got to ask you the question one more time for the people who knows, you know, about Mr. Powell. How'd you get the nickname Boog?
So my real name is Herschel Mac Powell IV. So they call my grandpa Herschel. They call my dad Mac, and I needed a name when I was little. So I went by Little Mac for a little while and then grew up a little bit, and my dad started calling me Boog. I remember he coached me, and I hated it because all my friends started calling me Boog, and I couldn't stand the name. And then it just slowly started to grow, and it ended up sticking with me.
But nothing toward Boog Powell, the former first baseman of the Baltimore Orioles, just you were Boog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not related at all.
Oh, it's good to have a Boog.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you like it now.
Yeah. We like it. Yeah. And we like having you around the way you've been playing, young man.
So. Thank you.
So, I tell you what, tell me a little bit about, you know, who do you watch? You know, you have Scott Brosius here now, who you worked with last year when you were down at Tacoma, and Mike brought up Edgar. But as far as the players inside the clubhouse, these guys are really together. I saw Kyle talking with Tyler O'Neill the other day. Who do you talk with? Who do you visit with? Who really helps you as some of the senior guys on this team?
Kyle last year, he did a thing for me hitting, just keeping my bottom hand straight and flexed. And that was the biggest thing last year for me. And then this year, I'd say just Sean O'Malley. I mean, we talk a lot. He's probably my closest friend on the team. Me and him are close. Okay. And, he's taught me a lot, just the mental side of swinging. And I've told him I wanted to be more of an offensive hitter, and he's been kind of guiding me along and showing me.
Well, I'll tell you what, young man, you're having a tremendous spring.
Thank you.
You know, the average is obviously there, but you're just driving the ball all over the place. Boog, thanks a lot for coming by tonight. We really appreciate it. Have a great rest of the way this spring, and I think you're going to play and pay big dividends to this organization for a long time. Thanks, Boog.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mariners outfielder Boog Powell back with more live from the Salty Senorita here in Peoria, Arizona, right after this timeout. And again, welcome back. We are live at the Salty Senorita before a cheering cast of thousands. Yeah, that's our cue. Welcome to Peoria, where it was, 91, 92 degrees today. The Mariners against the Dodgers. Okay. And welcome back to the Cactus League Report. Rick Riz along with Mike Blowers and Shannon Dreyer, producer-engineer Kevin Kremen. Our special guest right now is Mariner pitcher Dylan Overton. He made his Major League debut last year with the Oakland A's. We're happy to have him in a Mariners uniform. Ladies and gentlemen, Dylan Overton. Southpaw from South Weatherford, Oklahoma or something.
Yes, way out in western Oklahoma.
Boomer.
Sooner.
There you go. That's for Kevin Kremen right here. He grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tell us a little bit about, introduce yourself to the fans here and on the radio where you were born and raised, and tell us a little bit about Dylan Overton.
Well, I was born in Clinton, Oklahoma, which is actually about 10, 15 minutes from Weatherford, and lived there for a few years, and then we moved to Texas, Round Rock, Texas, until about fourth grade. After that, we moved back to Oklahoma to be closer to family, and I've been there ever since.
Good. Well, we're happy to have you in the Mariners organization. What do you think about what's going on now with the ball club? You've appeared in four games, eight innings, six strikeouts along the way. A couple of days ago, you struck out the side. Tell us a little bit about Dylan Overton, the pitcher. I understand you got a pretty good changeup. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I actually didn't start throwing a changeup until sophomore year of college. I had no idea what it was. I'd never tried to throw it. And then our pitching coach in college told me that it could be a real weapon with the way I throw. So he taught me how to throw, you know, basically just a basic circle changeup. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, I fell in love with it. I was able to control it really well. So it's my money pitch.
Who do you like to watch as a pitcher?
I told the team in our meetings that growing up, I always liked to watch John Smoltz. Mm. You know, he was one of the best in the game.
Yeah.
Fearless attitude. And I just kind of took from him as I grew up.
That's a good one.
Yeah, he was a good one.
Did they pick on you otherwise in the meeting yet?
Well, yeah, they all call me Jesus. So I don't know if it's just the hair or the beard or what, but
probably.
Yeah. I try not to think about too much of that because I'm not worthy of that. But you know, it's fun to play around with.
What about the camp in general? Coming over here and now you're going through this camp, and you mentioned the meeting in the morning and then everything else. How's that been for you? And how's it different maybe than where you were in the past?
Oh, it's been awesome. You know, and with the A's, it's a little more, I don't want to say strict, but to me it wasn't as fun over there as it is here. You know, here we like to joke around a lot, listen to music, make jokes with the players. It's just, it's really laid back. You know, when they called me after I got traded, they said, we want you to be yourself. Be you. That's all we care about. And they've stuck to that since the day I walked in the facility. So, you know, it's been awesome. This is going to be a good experience for me. You know, change of scenery will be really good, being from the A's for 3 years.
Right. Yeah.
And you had success in Nashville last year, 13-5, Dylan, with a 3.29 ERA. Now, you were a starter in the minor leagues, and last year with Oakland, you started five of your seven appearances. What do you think about your situation right now, working out of the bullpen? Or you still want to stay a starter and see how that goes, or what?
No, I told my wife, I don't care what I do as long as I'm in the big leagues. You know, starting, I've done most of my career, you know, starting young up until college. But, you know, if they want to move me to the bullpen, I'm all for it. Whatever they want me to do, I'll do for the team.
What's it like working with Mel Stottlemyre Jr.? This guy has done a great job with all the pitchers and is now in his second year as the pitching coach here.
No, he's a great guy. You know, he's really easy to get along with, easy to talk to. He understands what you're trying to do. He doesn't want to change too much, but if there's something that you need to work on a little bit, he'll let you know. And he's been great for me since I got here.
How'd you do with the PFP drills in the net?
I think I fared pretty well. I mean, some other guys maybe not, but to me, I think I did pretty good.
All right. Tell the folks on the radio exactly what that was all about.
Well, we had a PFP competition where they brought nets out onto the field, and they'd put them, you know, they'd scatter them from first base to the plate, second base, third base, and they'd either roll us bunts or hit us ground balls, and we'd have to throw and hit the net. If we missed, it didn't count. If we hit the net, it counted as one, but later on they changed the rules up on us a little bit. You had to hit the bullseye for 2 points, and if you didn't hit the bullseye, it was no points. So, I mean, it got a little tricky, but it wasn't too bad.
Who was the best in your group?
I don't know. That's kind of a trick question, you know.
He was.
I don't want to say me, but you know, we had some good guys
all
in there.
All right, all right.
Did you play any other sports growing up?
I did. I played basketball all throughout high school. Played football my junior year of high school. Tore three ligaments in my right big toe. I know. Sounds awful. It was awful. It hurts a lot worse than you think. But after that, I decided probably shouldn't play anymore. You know, I had signed that year to go to OU, and I didn't want a chance of getting hurt again, so I just kind of hung it up after that.
Baseball-wise, did you play in the field, or were you always just pitching?
No, I played first base junior and senior year, and then freshman, sophomore year, I was outfield primarily, and then they moved me to first.
Oh, gotcha. Can you hit?
I can.
All right.
All right.
In he's truly playing. Ready for anything.
Yeah. Visited with Dylan Overton, Mariners pitcher, down here at spring training, having a great spring with so many other guys on this ball club. Growing up in Oklahoma, Dylan, who were some of your favorite players and teams in that area of the country growing up?
Well, I mean, most guys, he was back in 2000. He was actually my high school pitching coach my junior and senior year, Colby Miller. He got drafted in the fourth round, I think, back then. He was on, you know, a state championship baseball team in Weatherford, went 42-0. They were unbelievable. And, you know, growing up throughout high school, I just really looked up to him because I knew he had been through the process that I'm going through right now.
Yeah.
So he knew what it was like. So I just looked to him for advice, and he helped a lot with that.
What did he tell you to help you out in this path, you know, spending some years in the minor leagues and now trying to make this ball club?
Yeah, I think he spent, you know, 6 or 7 years in the minor leagues, and I've been fortunate enough to move up pretty quick. And he told me, you know, whether you move up quick or not, the minor leagues are going to be a grind. I don't care who you are, it's going to be a grind. You're going to go through bus rides, plane rides, middle-of-night bus rides. So, you know, he said just prepare yourself, stay mentally strong, and you'll get through it pretty easy.
Good advice.
You've got your pitching coaches. You've also got some good catchers out there. What have you learned from some of the guys that have caught you early on?
Well, you know, they're all new, so I'm still getting to know most of them. But I'd say, you know, Tuffy, he caught me actually my last game, and he caught me against the Rangers when we played in Surprise. And, you know, I think me and him got really good catchers. You know, for the most part, it's like me and him are on the same page the whole time. So, I mean, for me, him just knowing me as a pitcher already in the short time that I've been here has helped out a lot.
It's really important to come out, like you were talking about, moving to the pen and throwing strikes. I know that's something that Mel has talked about all the time. Is that something you're comfortable with since you've been a starter, and now you're going to come out of the bullpen as far as how to prepare and being ready to come in and command the strike zone right away?
I mean, I've always prided myself on throwing strikes. It doesn't matter whether I come out of the bullpen or I'm starting. I rarely walk people, and it's a big deal for me. I don't like walking people. I always tell people I'd almost rather give up a home run than a walk. Depends on people on base, obviously, but, you know, I don't like walking people. You know, they're free bases. At least home run, usually they earn it.
Right.
So, no, I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue whether they want me to start or come out of the pen. I feel like I'll fill up the strike zone either way.
Great job, Dylan. No walks, 6 strikeouts on the spring. He's having an outstanding spring. It's going to be a fun season, and hopefully you're a big part of it, Dylan. Dylan, thanks so much for coming by tonight and joining us here on the Cactus League Report.
No, thank y'all.
Mariners pitcher Dylan Overton from Weatherford, Oklahoma. Hopefully his address is going to be Seattle, Washington. Live before a cheering cast of thousands, we'll be back with more from the Salty Senorita right after this timeout. And again, welcome back. We are live getting ready for the second hour here of the Cactus League Report from the Salty Senorita before a cheering cast of thousands. Yeah, make some noise. Rick Riz along with Aaron Goldsmith joins us now, and Shannon Dreher, and we have a very special guest, Mariner shortstop Taylor Motter is here. Taylor, how you doing, buddy? Thanks for coming by.
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
You are doing very well. 280, a home run, and 4 runs batted in and catching everything over there at shortstop. Tell us a bit about your spring and how things are going for Taylor Motter.
Things are good. Just excited to be here. Being in Arizona is nice. Travel's nice. New teammates, new team, great. Happy to meet everybody, get to know people. It's been fun.
Rick, you left out the one epic hair flip.
I think it was 2.
Yeah, there's got to be more than 2, right?
Yeah, the hair flip.
It went viral.
Tell us about the flow. You got some great-looking hair, buddy.
Oh, well, thank you.
I don't say that very often to guys, but you do.
Well, thank you. I've been growing up for a couple of years. Now it was a thing I grew out in low A where I wasn't playing that well, so of course it wasn't the player. It was the
right,
hair.
It's the hair.
So grew it out and started playing better.
Whatever works, right, right, Taylor? Yeah.
Taylor, is this a typical spring for you where you move around a lot? We know that you have the ability to play a lot of positions, but have you done this in the spring before?
Yeah, when I was with the Rays last year, I actually moved around more.
Okay.
I played a lot more outfield. I know we're struggling in the infield right now with the WBC, so it's been a lot of infield stuff. But, yeah, last year I'd moved from shortstop to right field, and, you know, I was playing all nine a lot of games, so...
So this is nothing now that you're playing as much.
No, I'm
happy. How are you guys doing right now? I know that the skipper kind of made a little bit of an effort to give you guys a little bit of a break this morning because you have been playing so much.
Yeah, he's been taking care of us. We had talked a little bit about what the difference was playing between here and Florida. And, you know, the workload's a lot different. You know, you show up in Florida, you got a 3-4 hour bus ride almost every other day. So you get to relax, take a little 3-hour nap to go to the place. But here you're out working every morning and going and going. So... Now that we're down a few guys, getting that nice show-up-late day was helpful.
I think that's why Skip started late day today, right?
Yeah.
Give you guys a little bit of a breather.
Yeah.
Hey, so, Taylor, we know that last year in Tampa Bay, you played every position but catcher and center field. So what would you say is your natural position?
I grew up playing short. I played short in college, high school, so I would say short.
And you got to tell us about your cameo up on the mound last year as a major league pitcher.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of upset I didn't get to throw in the bullpen. They wanted to hide me, they said. So I had to go in the tunnel in the batting cage and throw off the mound in there to get loose. So when I did that, I got to run out from the dugout to the pitcher's mound, which was weird, too. You figure you get to run from the bullpen. But I got to face two batters. I think I got a pop-up and a hit. I think somebody got a hit off me.
But you recorded in and out as a major league pitcher.
Yeah, I did. I got a pop-up, too. I think it was center field.
Well done. Was Kiermaier out there? He would have caught everything, or was he dinged up at the time?
I think he was dinged up. I think it was Brandon Guyer.
Okay. I'd say pitch to center field if I'm pitching for the Rays last season, right?
Hey, hit it up there anywhere.
And you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Are you scared in that situation? I mean, you're an infielder. You're a shortstop. All of a sudden, now you're pitching. You probably pitched in Little League or somewhere like that, but now you're in a big league venue and a big league team. You go, I got to throw some pitches here.
Well, it was funny. I guess the clock they have up there now, I'm so used to not really worrying about it in the infield, taking ground balls and getting loose. Well, when I went out there as a pitcher, I threw three balls and was loose. There was still a minute 45 left on the clock, and I was standing there awkwardly on the pitcher's mound.
Let's go.
Having no clue what was going on. I was like, guys, we're losing by a lot anyways. Yeah. Let's just get it going.
Yeah.
So the catcher came out, and he was like, how you feeling? I was like, man, I'm more nervous now than I was my first at-bat in the big leagues. I am shaking. I don't know what to do. I was like, I got a minute 40 to just sit here and wait, and hopefully I don't hit somebody.
Yeah.
But he calmed me down a little bit, threw strikes, and everything was fine after the first pitch.
So do you have a plan if this happens again?
No.
Well, let's hope not, right?
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope it doesn't happen again. Tell us a little bit about your debut last year with Tampa Bay and your first hit off Jay Happ.
Yeah, I think it was a 2-1 changeup, just a little squibber back to first base, that kind of push-bunnish hit that you get, and you just hit it and run.
Crazy.
Run as fast as you can.
And you got the ball. Who'd you give it to?
Well, it's actually the next day I hit my home run, and I broke my bat in that game, so I got it all put in a big thing that's on my hanging on my wall now. Yeah.
All right. Hang on to that, man.
Yeah.
Hey, so Taylor, tell us a little bit about how you like to go about approaching the game. I mean, are you a type of guy who is a see the ball, hit the ball type of guy? Are you somebody who's in Jimmy Hartley's film room and you got Edgar's iPad you're looking at? How are you as a hitter in terms of the preparation?
I would love to say I sit down and prep a lot, but I have too much going on inside my head to sit down and really break down stuff. So I guess I'm a see it and hit it type of guy who just wants to attack the game as hard as he can.
Now, when you say you got too much going on inside your head, does this mean you're just thinking about something all the time?
Oh, yeah. If it's not hitting, it's fielding. Or if it's not fielding, it's outfield. If it's not outfield, it's what that bird's doing up on the thing.
And how do you go about – we know that the days here in the Cactus League are long. You guys show up at the complex really early. How do you go about splitting up your time getting ready defensively between the infield and the outfield? Yeah.
Well, right now it's been pretty easy. It's just been all ground balls with these guys gone. During BP, though, is where I like to get my outfield work in. I feel like I get a lot more with balls off the bat than I would with a machine being fed with balls and stuff like that.
We know that the morning meetings are such a part of the Mariners' culture right now. Have you ever been a part of a team at any level that has done as many, we'll call it trust falls, team-building exercises as the Mariners have been doing this year and last year as well?
No, I haven't, but I love it. I think it's great. I think I get to know my teammates more and more every day, not only between the lines but outside the lines. I get to know, you know, family, hobbies, what they like to do, where they live in the off season, things like that you can get to know them on a friendship basis more than just as teammates.
When were you called on in the meeting?
Oh, I think I was one of the first ones.
And what was that like?
Very nerve-wracking. I had no clue what to expect. I think I had a little shake in my hands and my voice, kind of just waiting to see what his next question was going to be and what my next answer was going to be. So it caught me off guard a little bit.
Yeah. Tyler O'Neill played the piano, right? Played the keyboards. Did you have to do anything like that or sing or anything?
No, I kept all my musical talents to myself. So I didn't go out there and perform.
But you do have some.
No.
I thought you were just hiding them. Tell us a little bit about working with Edgar Martinez and Scott Brosius. These two guys are so good at what they do. And what have you gleaned from them over the last month or so here at spring training?
I still don't think I've reached the tip of the knowledge they have inside of their head. I've been taking it day by day and trying to squeeze as much information as I can out of them. But, you know, they're so full of knowledge and what they've learned and playing themselves that you can't explain it.
We talked about the morning meetings, but there are also other meetings where they talk about the drills, they talk about base running, different philosophies. Tell us something that maybe you've learned, something that maybe kind of opened your eyes a little bit in one of those.
I guess it would be on the hitting standpoint. The one thing they told me, which makes a lot of sense, ground balls are outs. And it just opened your eyes to thinking about, okay, now I can really attack pitches and put a ball in the air and hope for the best instead of just being happy and content with hitting a hard ground ball.
So that changes what you do at the plate because allow you to do that.
Absolutely, yes.
Hey, Taylor, you're a South Carolina guy, right?
Well, I'm from Florida. I went to school in
South Carolina. Okay,
yep.
So from the South.
Yeah.
Give me the Southern dish, right? Maybe from college or from home that you only can get when you're back in the homeland. You just can't get anywhere else when you're around the country.
Grits.
Wow, yeah. You know, I'm not a big grits guy.
I wish I was. I'm from Chicago, and
not
I love
grits.
It's crazy.
If you say eggplant parm, you'll make Rick very happy. Mm, just giving you an inside trip.
I've had it once or twice.
A week.
I miss Bojangles, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I know it's surprising, but Bojangles was a big morning thing before college. Go to Bojangles, get a nice spicy biscuit.
All right, spicy biscuit from Bojangles. We know how to get 4 for $4 out of Taylor Motter.
Right. Yeah.
Very nice.
Visited with Taylor Motter. And, Taylor, you went to Coastal Carolina University. Tell me, Chanticleers?
Chanticleers.
Chant.
Yeah.
Chanticleers. That baseball program has been outstanding, and basketball, too. But tell me a bit about the baseball program, because we looked it up, and there's been a lot of guys like yourself playing the big leagues from the Chanticleers.
Yeah, they're a mid-major school. They're a hidden talent that gets looked over in South Carolina between University of South Carolina and Clemson. You know, we don't get a lot of guys. We get the hard-nosed, blue-collar guys who are just going to play a game and play it hard, and we're going to play all nine.
What was the mascot? Because I remember we, opened up that, wikied it when you were there. And it's like, oh, we're out. We can't get this.
It's a Chanticleer. It's a rooster that is top of the hen house, I guess.
Okay.
Rules the
It's an angry chick.
It's the alpha dog of the roosters.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Yep.
I was trying to feed that to Aaron during the broadcast. Like, what?
Yeah. They required a commercial break to study before breaking it out.
I love it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I learned something tonight about Taylor, Chanticleers, and Coastal Carolina University. I'm learning a lot about the way you play, and you play the game hard. You play the game the right way. You're having an outstanding spring. Taylor, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming by tonight.
No, thank you guys for having me.
Mariner shortstop. Thanks, Taylor Motter, here on the Cactus League Report. We are live from the Salty Senorita here in Peoria, Arizona, on a beautiful Wednesday night out. And we'll be back with Chris Heston, and he's going to do a great job for the Mariners this year. We'll be back with Chris, who was the starting pitcher today. We'll be back with Chris right after this timeout. Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to the Salty Senorita here in Peoria, Arizona. Rick Rich, Anna Dreher, Aaron Goldsmith, and our guest here in the second hour of the Cactus League Report is new Mariner pitcher Chris Heston. How about a nice round of applause for Chris here? Chris got the start today, having an outstanding spring for the Mariners, coming over from the San Francisco Giants organization. Chris, tell me a little bit about how things are going so far for you this year. There's a lot of depth now in the starting rotation. What kind of spring has it been for Chris Heston?
Yeah, things are going well. It's been a lot of fun so far. I mean, you know, every day it's light in the clubhouse, and it's been a lot of fun. They know how to have a good time for sure. But at the same time, you know, they get their work done, and you know, they're about their business. So I've had a great time so far, and, you know, I'm looking forward to a lot more time with them.
How did they get you in the clubhouse when everybody has to get up and do anything? Have you done that yet?
Yeah, fortunately, I've kind of slid under the radar on that so far. But
you're right there.
I'm sure. Yeah. I get a good front row seat of all the presentations. But, yeah, luckily, I've kind of flew under the radar on that one so far.
All right, be ready.
Yeah, I'm sure it's
coming. They'll never ask you, Chris.
If you have a hidden talent, they're going to ask you to do it. There's no escaping that.
Definitely coming.
Hey, you're coming over to a new organization and having new eyes on you, having new pitching coach and those bullpen sessions. What have you kind of gotten from that?
Yeah, I think that's huge. And, you know, Mel's been great, and he was a sinker ball guy. You know, he kind of knows the kind of game I'm trying to accomplish. So, you know, to get to work with him and, you know, and like you said, get some new eyes on me and you know, just be somewhere different, I think it's been good so far.
How is it to take something that might be new into a game in a spring training situation?
Yeah, you know, but that's what spring training is for. You know, you want to apply stuff to get ready for the season and try to find a thing or two that can make you that much better, you know, for the season. So that's kind of what it's all about. But at the same time, it's about, you know, getting ready and doing things that you already do, you know, well for spring training. Hmm.
Chris, obviously, injury last year curtailed your major league experience a season ago, but 2 years prior to that, really strong season for the Giants. And looking at some of the numbers on your pitches, just kind of the metrics on paper, which most times are accurate, but sometimes they're not, but your slider and your curveball 2 years ago at the major league level were two really effective pitches. I mean, these were pitches that opponents were not squaring up. They were not hitting for a high average at all. We know you got the sinker, but can you talk to us a little bit about the development of your slider and the curveball and how effective that those have been at the major league level for you?
Yeah, those are kind of two big pitches for me. You know, the slider is a big strike pitch for me. It gets me back in counts, you know, in fastball counts. And then the curveball is kind of my bread and butter, kind of my out pitch, you know, kind of gets me, you know, early strikes to lefties and stuff. So to have both of those pitches going for me, it makes, you know, the other pitches like the sinker that much better.
Has the curveball always been ahead of the slider in terms of that strikeout pitch, or has there been a little bit of a race between those two as to which was the most effective secondary pitch for you?
Yeah, curveball's kind of always been, you know, my better pitch. I've thrown one my whole life, even when I was young, and a lot of people said it probably wasn't a good idea to throw them. I always had fun throwing them, but that's probably always been my go-to pitch.
Okay.
Visited with Mariner pitcher Chris Heston. Chris, last year I'm throwing out the window. You were hurt. You were on the disabled list for 60 days, but when you were healthy a couple of years ago with the Giants, here in the numbers right here, 12 wins, a 3.95 ERA, you made 31 starts on the season, about 180 innings pitched. But, you know, that season, one of the highlights for you, the no-hitter, I think on June the 9th of 2015 against the New York Mets in New York. What in the world was that like for a young pitcher to throw a no-hitter in the big leagues?
Yeah, that's a dream come true for sure. You know, that's something you dream about doing in the backyard as a little kid, and just to get the opportunity to do that in New York with, you know, my teammates, and my wife was there, and, you know, a couple family members and an old coach. So, you know, just to get to have the opportunity to do that was something I'll never forget.
Did you know, and I'm sure you did because it's right here in the media guide, you became the first pitcher to finish a no-hitter with three consecutive strikeouts since a fellow by the name of Sandy Koufax?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And actually, long story short, Joey Malfitano, the old third base coach for the Dodgers a long time, actually got me a baseball signed by Sandy Koufax. Congratulating me on that.
So, wow.
You know, that's something that'll go in the vault forever.
Did you sign a ball for Sandy?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Chris Heston, man.
I didn't even strike out the side with a no-hitter, dude.
You know.
But that's something special, and it was awesome for him to even, you know, take the time to do something like that. So that's something I'll keep forever.
What else did you keep from that game?
Oh, I got all kinds of cool stuff. Cleats and, you know, balls and lineup cards and, you know, just a lot of memorabilia stuff that, I've put away in, you know, a shadow box so I can, you know, put it up somewhere. Yeah. And
that's what Taylor,
that was
Taylor
Motta. That's the word, Taylor Motta. And there's a reason you have that word, I bet. This is the crossword king in the clubhouse. Yeah,
that's
the,
true.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah, that's kind of part of the routine, you know. I try to just get in the morning and, you know, hang out and do the crossword puzzle and try to train the mind a little bit, too, you know.
Give us a good crossword word. What pops up a bunch?
Oh, there's some good ones. Some stuff like you probably wouldn't think of a bird as an avian or whatever, but
probably not.
Yeah, it's just weird words like that that'll get you. So.
Baltimore Avians.
And we're talking with Chris Heston, Mariners starting pitcher. And Chris, you know, you had a chance to play in San Francisco for a manager that will assuredly be in the Hall of Fame, in Bruce Bochy. And Bochy has this very John Wayne demeanor about him, both in terms of his build, the kind of the swagger that he walks with, and his voice as well. Do you have a good Bruce Bochy story?
Oh, man. No, he like you said, I mean, he's one of the best. He really is. You know, you can just see him in the dugout thinking. And there was an instance where we were playing somebody, and he literally predicted what would happen in the eighth inning, in the fifth inning. And it went exactly how he called it. So that's just the kind of the manager he is. You know, he's constantly thinking, constantly knowing what's going on in the game. And, you know, it's pretty special to get to play for him.
Was he an intimidating guy to come up in the majors to play for?
Very intimidating. Nicest guy ever, but yeah. Just his presence. Yeah. And he's so big and, you know, he's pretty quiet. So you never know really what he's thinking. So he's a pretty intimidating dude.
Can you paint the picture for us what he has mounted on his wall in his office at AT&T Park?
He has a monster elk that he killed.
Oh, no.
He said one time,
with his bare hands.
Now, don't tell the people back in the Northwest I've got this on my wall. They'll probably be upset.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So let Chris Heston tell him this thing.
Yeah, well, sorry, Boch. But,
that's all.
Yeah, no, he's got, like I said, a
it eats up
elk.
Half the office. I mean, you walk in there and you hit your head on it.
Yeah, you got to duck around it just to get to, get to his desk.
Joe Madden has a pink flamingo in his office.
A real one.
So everybody has
There we go.
Chris, last year you worked with Dave Righetti, a good friend of mine. We were in the minor leagues together. He had an outstanding career as a starter and then a closer with the New York Yankees. Now you're working with an outstanding pitching coach in Mel Stottlemyre Jr. What have you learned from both of these guys to move forward in your major league career?
Yeah, you know, getting to work with Rags was awesome. You know, he did it for a long time at a high level, and he did it in the bullpen and he started. So to get to work with him was really cool. But like I said, Mel was a sinker ball, you know.
Yeah.
Rags kind of just blew everybody away from what I've heard. So.
Yeah,
he was great. But, you know, to get with someone who sunk the ball and relied on that kind of game, I think it's going to help.
Yeah, your sinker, obviously, is your pitch, a lot of ground ball outs. When you don't have the good sinker, where do you go? What kind of adjustments do you make for plan B to still go ahead and get people out?
Yeah, you know, those are the days when you got to battle. You know, you just kind of rely on other pitches and, you know, location and just really focus on getting the ball down and try to get ground balls, really.
We see hitters in the cages always talking hitting to each other and when they're waiting for their turns. What happens in the bullpen when you have your bullpen day and there's six of you up there? What are those conversations
like? Yeah, same thing. You know, you'd be surprised how much you could learn from, you know, just watching another guy's bullpen and just the way he does things and goes about his business. So, you know, we're constantly learning. We're constantly talking to each other and trying to help each other out as much as possible. And, you know, like I said, it's constant learning.
Who have you talked to on this team?
A lot of guys, you know, and you know, this one's a little different because a lot of these guys are, you know, almost my age or, you know, even younger. But, you know, Paxton and Smiley, who's someone that I've talked to a lot. But, you know, to have the opportunity to talk to, like, Giovanni and guys who have been around for a long time, and that's always nice, too.
Mariners, over the last year and this year, Chris, have talked about controlling the zone as a hitter and a pitcher, getting back into account, not walking anybody as a pitcher, taking your walks as a hitter. Looking at the numbers this spring, you guys haven't walked hardly anybody. You hadn't walked anybody until, you know, this afternoon, but you're having an outstanding spring. Tell us a little bit about the philosophy. You don't want to walk anybody anytime, but to drive that home, to throw strikes and get outs early in the count so you can go deep in the games.
Yeah, that, and that's the whole game plan, you know, is to try to get early contact or, you know, early outs as much as possible. And the less four-ball counts you get to or three-ball counts or even behind in counts, you know, when hitters are up there comfortable, yeah, it makes it a lot easier for them. So it's about pounding the zone, you know, controlling the zone like you talk about, and, you know, throwing as many strikes as possible.
I tell you what, Chris, we are so happy to have you here, buddy. You're going to have an outstanding season. You're healthy, and he's going to play a big role in the success of the franchise this year. Chris, thanks for coming by tonight.
Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it. Mariner pitcher Chris Heston, we're going to be back with more live from the Salty Senorita here in Peoria, Arizona. What a night out. Millions of stars up in the sky. We'll be back with more after this timeout.
Well, the Mariners' 20-game plan means you have 20 chances to see history with the team that is locked and reloaded and ready to battle in the American League West. As a Mariners season ticket holder, you'll enjoy great benefits, including guaranteed postseason priority. You can pick out your plan now at mariners.com/17. Now, I've had years of watching Rick do this, so let's give this a shot. The cheering cast of thousands.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick, that's not so hard.
It's a piece of cake, Aaron.
All right. I appreciate you writing it down for me, though.
Yeah, you let them do all the work.
Yeah,
they come out here.
Alley-oop right there.
Hey, we have the greatest fans in baseball from the Pacific Northwest all the way down to Peoria, Arizona. They're from all parts of the Pacific Northwest. They come here to the show. They've been baked out in the sun this afternoon at 94 degrees. And here they are tonight to come by to see Casey Candell and Boog Powell, Dylan Overton. Great talking with Chris Heston and Taylor Motter. That's what I love about this show is because you and I and Shannon, we get a chance to find out a little bit more about these guys. We see them in the clubhouse or getting ready, and sometimes, you know, should I talk to him right now?
Doing crossword puzzles.
Doing crossword puzzles. I don't want to interrupt, you know, if he's working on something. So this is great for us because we get to know these guys. And then the season starts, they're on the airplanes, we're at the hotels together and at the ballpark. And I tell you what, it truly is a dynamic where everybody comes together as a team, you know, us and the players, and to really find out who they are, where they come from. They're a lot more than just baseball players. You know, they got moms and dads who put the love of baseball in them and took them to Little League practices and went on to college or high school. And it's really nice this time of the night to get to know these guys in a relaxed atmosphere.
It is, and it's so neat to see the value that Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais have put on everyone in camp. And Jerry said this last year, and Scott said this, we're going to see almost each and every one of these guys up at some point. They are part of the team, not just when they come up, they're part of the team right now. And lo and behold, it happened. And so they look at a roster as not 25. They look at it as 40 and then possibly 45 as guys come and go as needed too. But they absolutely set the culture in spring training, and it's not just the coaches. It's the veteran players too. It's very important to Robinson Cano. He talks passionately about this and about making sure that everybody is welcomed in and feels a part of the team. And, you know, it's very different.
Yeah, and I think the key was for Scott Servais, Jerry DePoto, to go to the veterans on the ball club last year and to say, you know, this is what we need to do, and they took ownership in that, and they're the guys that make it happen. They're the guys that actually run the ball, the clubhouse, and Scott Servais said, this is your team, this is your clubhouse, and so if you see any kind of success going on with, you know, 60 guys in camp right now, and now, what, 52 with cuts above, 4 or 5 days ago. It's because the veteran leadership, Aaron and Shannon, they have to make it happen, and they're making it happen.
Well, there's been an incredible amount of buy-in by everybody, top to bottom, whether you are the 62nd guy who was invited to big league camp or you are Felix or Cruz or Cano. And I know, Shannon, you and I were talking about this before. We were rudely cut off by out number three the other day on the broadcast. and that was, this is the start of year two for this regime, and yet it's pretty incredible how much it feels like this has kind of been the norm for such a long time, and I think that really speaks to how much not only everyone has bought in terms of the personnel on the field, but also you think about the bigger picture, right? Think about guys like Andy McKay who are running the farm system and kind of preaching the good word to the guys who are coming up, the Tyler O'Neills and those type of guys who now we see in the major league camp who are now kind of humming the same tune that the guys like Nelson Cruz and Robinson Cano are doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it's something that it's going to kind of go in circles. I mean, you build from the ground up, but what they have at the top, a lot of it's there because it was doing those things
Yeah. Is this a chicken or the egg, Shannon? Is that
what
we're going?
I think that's what I'm trying to do, and it doesn't work very well on radio when I'm doing this with my hands. But you look at this.
Like you're Italian.
Which is fine with you, right?
Which is okay with me.
Talking with my hands. I do that.
Talking with her hands.
I cook like an Italian, too, for 12
like
at all times. They came in and there were systems that they wanted to put in place. And I think that we heard about it and we're all, how's this going to fly with a big league club? Well, no, you start in the minor leagues. And we talked about the PTBAs being introduced into the major league clubhouse. And it's something that they knew what it was, but it wasn't something you posted where you would post it in a minor league clubhouse and just kind of a different kind of teaching method. But I think the eventual goal is they have, this is what a Mariner hitter should be. And you know what? You're not moving up until you do these things. I don't care if you hit 50 home runs. If you can't get the guy in from third base, you're not moving to the next level. And so you heard Boog Powell talk about that, and that was what was important for him. And at some point, and it's just 2 years in, you're going to see player after player after player come up with that profile, with that personality. And it'll be just kind of a Mariner stamp that they put on people. And it's a brand of baseball that's being set right now in the minors, starting to be introduced with the kind of terminology in the majors, although a lot of that's already going on.
And when you look at the best franchises over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, whatever you might want to call it, they all have a sustainable farm system, right, that kind of feeds itself.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And they all have that type of player that has a certain DNA. And we're seeing that. I mean, Jerry is going after those guys via trades, via free agency as well. So you're right. It's kind of feeding the beast at multiple different levels for the Mariners right now.
Yeah, I like the way that Jerry's put together this ball club. The different pieces fit like gears. And everybody adds something. And to go out and get the speed that he went out and got. And Dicey, we saw that tonight. How many fans here saw Jerrod Dicey get on base 3 times tonight? 3 singles.
How many saw him back up third base and make a tag at third?
How about that play?
That was incredible.
I go, Noah's at third. Yes, Jerrod Dicey is at third base. And he took the throw and they got Trace Thompson. Trace Thompson is going, where did you come from? But, you know, that's just baseball savvy, speed, knowing what to do at the right time.
Their newest shift.
That's the shift.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, because you're on a position. Third baseman is over there. It was Kyle Seager that eventually got the ball and threw to Jerrod Dicey at third base. What have been some of the highlights for both of you so far this spring, watching this team come together as a team?
Well, first of all, an update. Felix, 4 scoreless for Venezuela tonight, against Drew Smyly.
Drew Smiley's just given up 1 run, and there was an error of his own that was involved.
It was his error, so that's still technically an unearned run.
Yes, but it was kind of a manufactured run with an error and a bunt. And
Smiley's night is over with for Team USA, going 4 2/3. 8 punch-outs for Smiley. Since when did Smiley become the king of the strikeout? But, yeah, Smiley has done, so that's your WBC update.
That's what we wanted, a pitching battle in that one.
That's right. That's Scott Servais and Jared Appel are very happy about that. You know, Rick, to get back to your question in terms of things that have been most exciting to see so far this year, the speed is the easy answer. I know when we talked about this a little while ago, I really enjoyed seeing all the fun that these guys are having, which is really reflecting itself, I think, in some really positive results on the field. It's easy to make that comparison when they are playing well, right? But, I mean, you have a mariachi band and a guy taking BP in a sombrero, and I mean,
that's a good thing.
And it's pretty easy to stay loose, and it just seems to me that those teams that have such great success at this level obviously have to be talented, but they have to be able to flush things, right? They have to be able to flush a bad at-bat, a bad game, even a bad series. And to me, it seems like the Mariners are building the type of foundation that would make that easier to do than for most. And let's face it, it will happen to every team at some point over the course of the season.
And I think you both agree, and the fans here agree. I love watching the kids come up from the minor league camp to find out what it's like to play in a big league game. These are big league games. These are big league players. It's spring training, but they're big league games. To see a Luis Liberato come up to home plate and hit a shot off the wall in the left center field, hit off the top of the wall, bounce way back into center field, have an inside-the-park home run. I love seeing these kids. Watched him in a B game the other day. He's out in center field, run around at second against the San Diego Padres. I'm standing next to Alvin Davis and James Lofton, a minor league coach. There was a base hit into left center field, and James Lofton turned around and said, watch his arm. He charged the ball, got to the ball, threw the guy out at home plate by about 10 feet. I love watching the kids because these are the great stories. These kids are going to be in the big leagues.
I want to point this out. We saw two big comebacks a couple of days ago when those kids were in. When you had Ian Miller
yes.
stealing bases, when you had Liberato bouncing them off the walls, when you had Joe DiCarlo coming up with a couple of big hits, and they were doing everything, you know, they were advancing
yeah.
the guy who was on base. I don't think it's any coincidence that we saw those comebacks. They were playing the brand of baseball that they're playing in the minors right now that gave the Mariners the highest winning percentage in organizationally
yeah.
in the minor leagues all of last year. And when you talk about building the system, when you look at what you have right now in the minor leagues and when you look at what you have in the outfield, Kyle Lewis, I saw him out on the field today doing a number of drills with a trainer, no brace on his knee. They're still targeting a July return for him. They're being very careful with that, but you know, he's off the anti-gravity machine. He is running on the ground right now, and
he's running on Earth is what you're saying.
Back on Earth, which is a really good thing to say. It's always a good starting point if you're an athlete. But he was out there. You look at what Tyler O'Neill and how close he could possibly be. You look at the pitching and Andrew Moore, Max Posey is
yeah.
starting to open eyes. I mean,
yes.
those two very well could be mainstays in the rotation yeah. in another year. And people talk about the farm system and, oh, you don't have much down there. I can count a couple of outfielders that you could see in a year. I could count a couple of starting pitchers that you could see in a year, and that's huge.
And watching these kids play, I understand why the Mariners' seven farm clubs last year all made the playoffs. They're playing the game the right way. Rick Riz, Shannon Dreyer, and Aaron Goldsmith. We're going to be back with more. We'll have an interview with Mariner bullpen coach Mike Hampton as the Cactus League Report continues live from the Salty Senorita before a cheering cast of hundreds now here in Peoria, Arizona, but they're still making some noise. We'll be back after this timeout. Hey, everybody. It's a giveaway guaranteed to be a hit. Wednesday, April the 19th is Ichiro Dual Bobblehead Day. Ichiro's coming back. This collectible commemorates the former Mariners hitting milestones thanks to Root Sports. It's free to the first 20,000 fans with the Miami Marlins. And Ichiro himself faced the Mariners. Tickets at Mariners.com. The Mariners' first homestand of the year, April the 10th through the 19th. 3 against Houston, 3 against Texas. And then the Marlins come to town with Ichiro on April the 17th, 18th, and the 19th. Coming up here, Aaron Goldsmith had a chance to catch up with Mariners bullpen coach Mike Hampton. Mike has been around the game for a long time, a two-time All-Star, 20-game winner back with the Houston Astros in 1999. He won 22 games. He was 22-4 that season. His second year as a bullpen coach, here's Aaron Goldsmith with Mariners bullpen coach Mike Hampton.
You know, Mike, the bullpen last season kind of went from a bunch of strike throwers who lacked some upper-tier velocity to all of a sudden, by the end of the season, you had the strike throwers plus a ton of velo. When you look back to last year, how do you see the bullpen for the Mariners kind of evolving?
Well, coming into spring training, and when we left spring training, it was quite a bit different. We added Nick Vincent later, and then, you know, the closer being Cishek, and he did a good job for us. We kind of, you know, evolved, honestly, probably a little quicker than most of us had thought with Edwin Diaz coming into the mix probably about mid-season. And by the end of the season, we were clicking on all cylinders. Cishek really did a great job of embracing the eighth inning role with Diaz sliding into the ninth inning role. We got another Archimedes came over from Pittsburgh, and, you know, we had another guy throwing 100. Vincent with the cutter. You know, we had some guys with, Scribner came over and just a strike throw with a curveball he could throw any time for a strike. He had a fastball that he could put pretty much anywhere he wanted. So we had a lot of different looks that we could give a team. And honestly, probably about 2 to 3 months into the season, we just, I mean, took off, and these guys were doing some special things, and we were able to give a bunch of teams a bunch of different looks.
So as personnel changes over the course of the season, how does that impact your job on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I mean, you know, you can look at some video, but, you know, I like to put my eyes on guys. I think Jerry does a great job of getting some guys in here. We got a lot of depth this year. We got a lot of guys on this team that's probably not going to make our team coming out of spring that would make a lot of staffs in the major leagues. So we're real fortunate that we have a lot of depth. And if one of these guys has a hiccup or has to go down for a little bit, we got a pretty good second-tier guys that can come in and fill the gap.
So fans see you from time to time, whether they're in the ballpark or certainly watching the game on television, and they see Mike Hampton kind of standing guard in the bullpen as guys are warming up. So once the first pitch of the game is thrown at 7:10, what is the rest of your night like in terms of the work that you do back in the bullpen?
Well, to be honest with you, we try to have a little fun down there and kind of keep it, you know, as relaxed as possible until it looks like we're going to have a chance to start eating up some innings. And so we just, you know, we stay tuned to the game. You know, I want the guys to be engaged in the game, but I also don't want them to be so super focused that they're drained by the time they get out there. So, you know, this is my first year. Last year in the bullpen, coaching the bullpen, but you know I pitched a little bit in the bullpen early in my career and late, so I kind of got a handle on what I do, and I kind of share some of that knowledge with them. But you know, we have some veteran guys suited down there that have done it for a while, especially last year with Benoit, and you know he kind of would take some of the younger guys through some of that process. So it was good to kind of lean on them. They lean on me. Like I said, we kind of try to keep it light and fun down there. But when they step on the rubber, I kind of give them a little bit of information on the hitter weaknesses and strengths. And also, don't remember that it's pretty tough to hit, so use your strengths as well.
You had an absolutely sensational career in the major leagues. In one of your All-Star seasons, 2001, you were pitching for the Rockies. And that was, of course, the All-Star year in Seattle. What do you remember about your All-Star appearance at Safeco Field?
Well, you know, it was fun to go back. You know, it was 93 when I was there the last time, you know, as a Mariner, and then I think one other time there in interleague play. But it was nice just to enjoy the city. Enjoy the people, and then even last year it was just amazing how nice people are and what a great city it is to be around and be in. But anytime you get in the All-Star game, you try the best you can to kind of soak in as much as you can, just really enjoy the moment, because not everybody makes it one. And you know, to go back, it was my second time. You know, the second time around, I was probably a little bit more relaxed, knew how to handle the situation. But and then my former manager was there, so I got a chance to talk to Lou. And you know, I was a 20-year-old kid when I was traded before, so I probably had a little gray hairs by then. But just to see the evolution of the King Dome, and then being back in Safeco Field, and what a beautiful ballpark they had built, and just having fun with it. You know, the All-Star games are meant to be fun, and you know, I do my best to have that much fun.
Is there a Lou story that stands out for you among all others during your times with him?
Well, I mean, he just, you know what Lou's like? He's just honest. And I remember him coming to the mound, and it was simple as, son, if you don't throw strikes, I can't use you. So I was off to the dugout, and I was like, probably makes a lot of sense. You know, I was probably in all the situations. Like I said, I was 20 years old in the big leagues, and I was facing guys that I'd been collecting their baseball cards just a couple years, you know, prior. So probably a little over my skis at that point. That point in my development, but he was straightforward. He was a lot like my father. He didn't have to worry about what he was thinking. He was going to let you know, and that's the kind of way I liked it.
Hey, you won the Gold Glove and the Silver Slugger in the same season. You're the first pitcher to ever do that. Which award meant the most to you at the time?
Well, honestly, the Gold Glove, because I mean, no one's stopping Maddux from winning that thing. I think he won like 200 in a row. But, you know, I look back on, you know, just his career as a fielder. I mean, he just got so many chances because he knew what he was doing the ball. And, I mean, they were hitting it on the ground. And so probably the Gold Glove at that time. I mean, I enjoy hitting, and everybody understands that and knows that I work at it. And, you know, I wanted to be able to help myself, help my team as much as I can. The way I see it, if I scored a run, if I bunted a guy over, you know, I was not only helping the team, but, hey, I was giving me another run, another chance at a run, so I took that pretty seriously. But the Gold Glove sticks out the most.
Finally, Mike, when you were in high school, you were a fantastic football player as well, and you were awarded a dual scholarship to Florida State for both football and football and baseball. What position in football did you play?
I was a defensive back. My junior year, I believe, I had 10 interceptions, and that was kind of when I started getting noticed. I could run a little bit, ran the option quite a bit at quarterback, yeah. Threw a little bit, but we had a pretty strong tandem in the backfield, so I ran a lot of the options, stuff like that. So I was more of probably an athlete than a position guy. I did play safety, like I said, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed hitting quite a bit, so that's kind of what I look forward to, get some payback on those defensive end, those linemen that used to clobber me in the backfield. So I'd catch them kind of looking up for a ball on a punt, and I'd wreak havoc as much as I could. But it was just something I played since I was 4 years old. I loved football, and I mean, I was My dad, you know, I think it helped my mentality in a lot of other areas. But I mean, you got to tough it out in that sport. So being 5'10" on a good day, going up against some 6'2", 6'4" receivers, probably wouldn't have been my best option. So being left-handed, I was fortunate enough to have the option to play baseball as well.
Is there a Bobby Bowden recruitment story at all in the mix here for you?
No, not really. I mean, I honestly, like I said, I mean, I was actually getting recruited by Florida, too. I went to more University of Florida games, you know, sat on the sidelines there. I have, you know, I would sit in the recruiting meetings and stuff like that more so. And I think baseball was definitely first at Florida State and then, you know, with the option, you know, to play football. So I remember meeting with Mike Martin through the baseball scholarship side. Here, one of his favorite places was Cracker Barrel, and it's one of mine, too. So that's where we picked for breakfast. So, but more baseball-oriented in our meetings.
Hey, Mike, you've been really kind with your time. I know this is a very busy time of the year for you, like everybody else. So thank you so much. It's been good catching up with you.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me on.
Well, what a visit between Aaron Goldsmith and Mike Hampton, two sports star in high school and had a chance to go to Florida State on a football baseball scholarship.
I was really hoping that there was some Bobby Bowden, you know, some great epic Bobby Bowden story, but that's okay.
Yeah, here's a Cadillac in the driveway.
Aaron, you should have heard what he offered me.
That doesn't end. Yeah, we had a kid, Mike Wilson, right? I guess Oklahoma offered more money, but he's tied with baseball. Anyway, hey, great show, guys. It was fun visiting with Casey Candell. And Shannon, that's always a lot of fun talking with Casey Candell and all the other guys as well.
You know, it's funny. I just realized every time we have a coach, they're tired. They have such long days.
Yeah, I know.
It's just like they might be the hardest
working. If we could find a nocturnal cameraman, a day in the life of a major league coach in spring training would be pretty good. But you'd have to be up at the worst hours of the day.
I think Tim Bogart already is at the ballpark.
He's working out right now. Yeah.
He gets here before everybody. Yes. But this is the hardest working crew in show business, this coaching staff. And I tell you what, this spring has been a lot of fun. There's still a lot more left to go this year as this club gets together. What, 52 still in camp, Shannon, with obviously a lot more cuts to go. But I'm looking forward to the guys coming back from the World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I am too. It's great to see that, you know, the match between the U.S. and Venezuela turned into that pitching matchup. And Drew Smiley's going to come back having struck out
eight
in four innings.
How about that? 1-0 Venezuela.
So really exciting. Yeah. It's something to look forward to is what do these guys look like when they get into spring and just knowing that they've had that competition and are ready to go.
Can't wait to get them back. They're having a lot of fun right now. Thanks a lot for joining us live from the Salty Senorita before a cheering cast of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 folks here tonight. We will see you next week from Peoria, Arizona as 2017 spring training continues. So long, everybody.
Can it, Matt?
See you later!